You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Thanks for tuning in to this special edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. This year, we were presented with something we didn't expect, which was a pandemic, and a lot of us were shut down. During that time, we put together a COVID-19 dental relief conference, and we had some of the greatest teachers in all of dentistry come forward to inspire this incredible industry. In this series, we're going to go back and take a look at the best of the best from that COVID-19 dental relief conference. We hope you enjoy it.
And I've been through lots of times, and that's Christian was pointing out some of those things, and nothing like this. I mean, nothing that shut us all down. I mean, I always used to believe, and I had been saying, and as I'm learning more, I'm not sure I still think this, that all the things that we have always done to protect all of our patients from the spread of any disease, they work. And I have no reason, and I still really don't, to believe they don't work the same based on this one. However, the ease of transmission, at least it seems it's so contagious that it can exist on a magazine cover or in a droplet or on a table for such a period of time, that may be something we haven't dealt with before. I don't know the answer to that, and I'm trying to read everything I can find. And the downside of that is you realize that everything that we're reading at this point is opinion.
Yeah,
because good research is not really available because it's been such a short time.
Right. And the feed is blowing up. People want you to go back and finish your thought before you got cut off.
Right.
And Nicole asked a question. Can we go back before he cut out? If we treat patients, what were you trying to say?
So what I was going to tell you was that the state of Colorado sent a thing in response to this dentist in Colorado that they really couldn't answer what that would mean. However, this was what they said was that you treat a patient, and should that patient contract the virus and it's serious enough that they decide to do something about that and they blame you as being the potential source of that transmission, that the first thing that an attorney would ask in any suit would be, were you aware of the recommendation of the American Dental Association that patients should not be treated except for emergency purposes? So if you had an emergency, the way I'm reading this, and I'm not an attorney, so I'm reading into this, but that was a nebulous response. Nebulous responses always concern me because it means that we don't really have an answer here. Are you covered for that? If you are treating someone who is, you know, not an emergency or urgent, I mean, and how do we define that? And so I guess it would be that the patient would have to understand this was emergency care. And you get my point here. And so what we've been telling people is that I can't make that decision for you because I don't know for sure. But I think it's something that you have to ask a question about.
Yeah.
You know, what risk are you opening up for yourself and others? And I'm,
Right. Now, Chris Ramsey put this in here, and others are too.
Hi, Chris.
The governing body thing, ADA is not a governing body. So can you speak to that?
I get that. However, the standards of care stuff come from them, and those get used all the time. I'm bringing it up only as a question, okay? Right. And if we had, I don't know, if there's an attorney or someone representing and knows this, I would love to have an answer. I have been trying to call people and get a straight answer, and I'm really struggling to get one. That was my point. Because I've been calling, you know, and saying, so would it be covered? And I can't get a straight answer. And that was kind of my point.
Right. And even though it may not answer all the questions being asked around the ADA recommendations, we are going to have an ADA expert join us. Excuse me. He and a guest, Rich Rosato, an oral surgeon and great friend of ours. And he may be able to answer a few more questions or field a few more questions that we can't currently answer.
Yeah. And one thing, can I just say this? There was an earthquake this morning where Curtis is at. Are you guys okay? Like, that was a big one too.
Oh, thanks, bro. No, it was great. My kids were a little, I've got a house full of girls and they were a little freaked out. So I had to step away for a second.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Everyone's safe.
10 minutes in the broadcast. He goes, there's an earthquake here. I'm like, oh gosh, could it get any more challenging?
All the lights were swinging here in the office. It was a little nuts.
Oh gosh. All right. We're glad you guys are okay. So I didn't want to interrupt this, but Gary, I love these thoughts because we're getting bombarded with these questions. We're going to try to gain as much clarity on this as possible. But what else are you telling the dentist that you're leading? Because you guys are a leader here, you know, and people are looking for a little leadership. Give us some thoughts on that.
Well, the first thing is that you have to pull your team together and decide what is the most appropriate thing for you to do as a team. And I agree wholeheartedly with what I know has been said in the past by you and by Christian, is that, you know, this is the time you're the leader. And whatever you believe, you also have to make sure your team is with you on that, which means that their input and their feelings become really, really important in this. And, you know, it does go to how do we manage this? If I've always believed that my number one family is my number one family, and I never expected people who came to our practice to be part of that, but I hope we have a good shot at number two, which we can become the kind of the second group of people in your life, which is the most influential in what you do. And in fact, I'd love to say that Cheryl and I are both the oldest of six, and they're all about the same ages. We're a tight group of 12 people. Well, one of Sierra's brothers passed away, but 11 of us. And I really was more involved in the daily life of these people in my dental practice than I was at all in my siblings, because I lived with these people on a daily basis. So I think the first thing that has to happen is you have to somehow pull together as a team and say, how do we feel about this? I think it's important to share those. People are afraid. And some of that fear is hype. Okay. But it doesn't matter. It's still fear. And being able to share your fear lets other people hear that you're afraid, which I think is an important part of that. Somebody said to me, there shouldn't be any fear of this. And I said, I disagree respectfully. I think there should be fear, but you should feel that fear, own it, and then say, okay, so what is the way that I manage that to move forward? Because I have to. I don't really have a choice about moving forward. What's the best thing I can do? I spoke to someone yesterday who was upset and scared about many, many things. And so many of those things, they all rush on you at once. And so I don't want to say panic because it kind of is, but it kind of isn't. You don't know what to do because you think there's so many things I should be doing all at once. And so one of the things that I honestly believe is that if you could focus on one thing you can do. So one of the first things that came up was for this young man was that, you know, I have no money. I have full schedules tomorrow and moving forward. And in his state, the state dental board had just sent out a letter that was recommending, and it said that they close. And he was saying, you know, what should I do? And I said, well, I can't tell you what to do because it's a recommendation. What I can tell you is that you're thinking of so many things to do. Why don't you think of one? Would you agree that your patients who have pre-existing conditions or are in a high risk are patients you would probably not recommend for elective care for the next couple of weeks. If you as a team can agree to that, then the first thing to do is let's get a hold of those people and let them know right away that we want to reschedule them into a future appointment.
Right. Now with that, this is great because Darren Becker in Atlanta asked this question, Gary. Okay, so that's totally what he's thinking, but what constitutes emergency essential dental care? Give us some rails here that means, you know.
That was hard. Actually, we spent a lot of yesterday trying to figure that out, you know, because historically, if we think about emergencies, there were two kinds. There were the actual emergencies that were health threatening, and then there were things that got classified as emergencies. I was telling someone there are aesthetic emergencies, right? Aesthetic emergencies is someone who has to have their face in the public and breaks a tooth off. Does that still qualify? You know, I don't know. I'm not sure I can define it. I can define it, you know, kind of succinctly. It's something that threatens the health, that if we don't act, an ongoing condition will continue to deteriorate. Okay, that is acute now, and it will continue to deteriorate until it becomes irreversible and threatening in that way. So infection, swelling, bleeding. I mean, I'm not sure. That was one of the things that we also recommended, and I sent out a thing yesterday to all of our database, and I kind of said, you know, the first step here is going to be to define an emergency. If you decide to go along with the recommendations, you got to define an emergency. What does that really mean? And I don't know.
Okay, another question came in. This is so good, Gary. This is the stuff we need. Tiffany asked the question on the perio side of things. Can you speak specifically hygiene services, like specifically to perio? Is this not emergency? I don't know.
So the question I would ask myself, because we've all got to deal with this, and I'm not saying this is right. I'm just going to tell you what I'm thinking for myself.
Right. I think it's important to say this is not legal advice.
Yeah.
We're just talking about what we think. Okay.
And sometimes, you know, one of my favorite people, Herb Blumenthal, gave me a shirt as a gift that says, "Don't believe everything you think." So I could not agree more. So let me tell you what I think. I would have to ask myself this: if we don't see that patient, will their condition deteriorate enough in the next 3 weeks? Because that was the recommendation from the ADA. I saw a couple of them that were not that full 3 weeks. There was a couple I saw from somewhere that were 2 weeks because people were sending them to me all day the last 2 days. In that period of time that I believe we're going to have to not be available for non-emergent issues, will the condition deteriorate to the point where treatment would not be the same? And then I got to say that for a lot of perio things, I'm not a periodontist. I don't know. If I really wondered about that, I would probably, you know, call my periodontist and say, I'm struggling with this. You know, should we be doing this? I think there seems to be some reasonable evidence about creating aerosols. So I'm not sure about the Cavitron, especially if I don't have enough mask to be able to replace it after every patient, which is what you should do. I mean, I don't know. This is not easy. It's not like, okay, here's the line.
Gary, I really love how you define that, because even Tiffany asked after that initial question, she said, what about pregnant patients who need perio? And I think it is a case, but this is definitely, we need to take care of our patients, and taking care of our patients is not getting them sick. But if they can't, if it's going to get worse within the next 3 weeks, then we should see them. And a periodontist also jumped on here and said, for some of my patients who are in dire need, I've missed it, Kirk or LAD, I see that. He basically said, and I love how you said, Gary, talk to your periodontist, because he basically said some of my sensitive patients, I'll be willing to see on a case-by-case basis. This is wonderful. Such a great discussion.
And we should be seeing those people. I honestly believe that, you know, closing your office, if you decide just to close it, is okay. But the best thing we could do is try to help be a positive force in this by taking anybody who has emergency things that can be managed by us and getting them out of the medical system. I tell you, there's an interesting thing happening here that a good friend of mine, one of the guys I work with, Dr. Mitch Ellingson, and he has a number of friends, he's from here, who practice here, physicians. Two of them are emergency room practices. And he said what they're doing is some of the nursing home here and care facilities here, when a patient shows any symptoms, they're bringing them to the emergency room. But then they won't allow them back if there's a possibility that they could have this virus, and they're stacking them in hospitals. And it's becoming really an issue here that a lot of those people don't still need to be there, quote unquote, but they're also afraid to put them back in that other environment. And, you know, that's kind of wild.
Right. Go ahead.
Kirk, Ellie. I was just going to chime in because I did find the questions being asked about and the responses coming in about from one of our periodontists, who said she's still seeing her fragile perio patients, which I'm assuming is defined by the ASA classification, only because the risk medically to the patient is just so large.
Amen.
Another comment just regarding perio disease, there was a study done by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases stating that the aerosols of COVID-19 remain there for 3 hours. So if doing perio, most often may be using a Cavitron, and there's a good risk postpone or a good risk for exposure.
Yeah, and let me add one more thing, because the feed is blowing up, we need to talk about provider safety too. Do you know
Indeed.
What I mean?
Indeed, absolutely.
Right. Let me just say this one more thing about there's so many people on, 1,400 people on, and I want to give a voice to everyone about how we respond. Another periodontist saying, for 42 years in his practice, patients can survive other than an abscess. Basically, we're looking at what we understand is the basis for emergencies. So other than an abscess, they will survive. Our criteria is basically pain and swelling. Think about how many patients actually put off treatment for months and months just because they don't want to have it done. And now we're having this dialogue about who should we service.
Yeah, now put that all together, Gary, and make some sense of it for us.
Good luck. I wish I could. So one of the things that we're recommending then as a first step is let's define those for ourselves and then decide what that means for us. And then as a team, because again, you know, am I okay? There might be some team members who are going to be reluctant to want to be there. Once I talked to someone whose child, you know, has an immunity issue, should she be in a dental practice where you're, even when you're seeing emergency patients, I mean, given this, and I think this has to be decided on an individualized basis, which is why the first step to do something. And I'll go back to this individual who was really, really kind of scared. And our first step is pick one thing, you know, you can do, let's do that. And what was wild was he called me later in the day and he said, you know, I feel I am not unafraid, but I feel better having done something. And we continue to take those steps. And it reminds me of the Edmund Hillary thing where they said, how did you possibly do that? How could you look up there and think, how am I going to get there? And he said, I never looked up there. I looked one step forward and I took that step. And all of a sudden I was there. And I think that's, you know, Christian said that. He said, we'll get through this. And I think that we will. So.
Yeah. And I know we will. You know, if I'm a young dentist watching this, and Gary, you've seen a lot of stuff. I mean, Mark Hyman's text to me yesterday, like we've seen a lot of stuff, you know, we have, and you've got, you know, dentistry is one of those industries that really, I mean, you're talking about multi-billion-dollar industry. It's not going to dry up. It's not going to disappear. But if you've got 3 decades in front of you, help us with this. Cause Gary, you've mentored thousands and thousands of incredible restorative dentists. What are the patterns that you see of the great ones that make it through?
Well, I guess when you find yourself on the edge, on the ledge, you muscle up the courage to come back inside and say, okay, what is the most important thing that I could do right now to be of the most service to the people I've chosen to serve? And if I can pull back from my own fear and realize that I have an opportunity to participate in the fears of others in a positive way, I honestly believe that what happens is it doesn't go away. That's not what I mean. It doesn't change that I'm afraid. What it changes is how I feel about doing something. And it's why I think the most important thing you can do when you feel panicked, you know what? I don't know how the bills are going to get paid. I don't. I'm afraid. I'm afraid for our company. I'm afraid for dentistry in general. I'm afraid for all the people. But I can't act on that globally. So I got to think of something I can do just in my world to do something. Because, you know, one of the things, and I know this is going to come up later, you know, I often find reasons not to be up in my Peloton. I've been on it a lot lately because I'm doing something. I'm not anything. I'm out. I'm actively doing something. I'm trying to do stuff so that I don't sit and think, because I don't want to, unless I'm thinking about what step is the next step or talking about, like I said, I think pull your team together and say, guys, it looks like we're going to be here for emergencies for the next whatever weeks it is, whatever you've decided based on what your state is recommending. Or if you've decided I'm not going to follow the recommendations, whatever you've decided, here's how we're going to address this. Okay. And, you know, I was talking with someone who was a firm believer in the fact that this is not what we think it is. There is some interesting evidence that points to the fact that it may not be what we think it is. In other words, in terms of severity, quote unquote, based on the data that's being collected. And if you've been watching and reading, you're going to hear both sides. And as I said, so far, I'm calling that opinion not science. But the truth is the science, you got to deal with what you can see. So having said that, I was speaking with someone along those lines, and I said, you know, it doesn't matter that you determined to move forward that way. It's that you just made the decision to act. And once you make that decision, then how are you going to share that with the people around you that so it makes sense and so you find a way to move forward? If you decided to stay and see patients, one of the things that's going to come up immediately is your patients are probably going to ask you why, because they watch the news. And now you would have absolutely lucid reasons about what you believe and why you believe this and why you know they're perfectly safe. Because I know you would never do anything with a patient that would put them in danger.
Right. Yeah. Can I add one thing too, Gary? Because what you're bringing up is great. And Nicole said this, hey, look, you know, we can all do something. She said, our team is working. We're delivering food. We're going, you know, to elderly patients who are not getting, we're just doing anything we can to show up for the community. That's one thing you could do.
Absolutely. I think the important thing you just said, Kirk, and that was the most important thing I've heard all morning. Please do something, whatever you choose to do. Okay. If what you choose to do is go fishing for social distance, go fishing for social distance. But here's my point. In that choice, you will feel power. You are empowered. And the difficulty in a time like this is we are taken out of being empowered. There's no empowerment for anything. I don't know what to do next. I mean, if you would have talked to me a week ago, the discussion would have been different. I fully expected us to be seeing patients through this because I think we have always done everything necessary to protect our patients really, really well. I absolutely believe that. I still believe it. I believe that we protect them very well. Okay. Are there other reasons why we should be concerned? Well, yeah, but I don't know that the science is there yet. Today, I don't know that I can make that recommendation only based on what's happened. When associations and then governments, state boards, start making recommendations that you do things, it's hard to go against those sorts of recommendations, you know. And if you want to, I understand. But if someone asks me, I say you have to think about it only in this regard. Make your decision and then be ready to talk about why that was a good decision. And if, and by the way, the decision to stay in practice right now and see your regular patients, if they still want to come and see you, I don't think is a bad decision, quote unquote. It's going to be seen in a different light given all the publicity.
Right.
How will you manage that?
Yeah. And sometimes you're going to have to get creative. So I'm just watching these things come in. But a young dentist mentions this in the Facebook group. Why wouldn't you review treatment and talk to patients on Zoom? Like, that's something, you know.
Hallelujah.
You know, like, start going through charts, talk to patients on Zoom, say, hey, look, we can't see you, but I'm thinking about you. Hey, jump on here. How you doing? What's going on? It's better than watching CNN all day.
Yeah, no kidding. I know. It's anything that you can do. Actually, one of the things I will tell you that, and this was going to come up, that we recommend to everybody is stay in touch with your patient base, send them notes, tell them what's happening. For this reason, they're home too. A lot of them are home too. If they're working from home, they're still home. People are feeling isolated. One of the best things we could do is just find a way to stay in touch. Even if it's just to say, hey, thinking about you, hope everything's okay. Let me know how you and your family are doing. I mean, to me, that's important. And that doesn't have to be just the doctor. One of the things we talked about is whenever people go to a dental practice, if they come back, they come back because they felt like they belong. And I'll use me as an example. There were a lot of patients who came to our practice not because they liked me. Now, they didn't dislike me, so don't hear that wrong. But what they did like was somebody else. Somebody else connected with them. Somebody else they wanted to see. I mean, I remember, you know, for years when I was learning and teaching at the Pankey Institute, one of the primary reasons I went there was Diego Oquendo. Diego, when I first went, the first time I was ever there, I was introduced to him. And he's a wonderful man, and I just really liked him. And one of the things I always looked forward to was being there so that I could say hi and spend a little time with Diego. He's still there, by the way. So, you know, those are the kind of reasons people come. That means that if I want to keep in touch with people, it doesn't have to be just me. It can come from the office, but it often is even better if it comes from one person at the office.
Totally agree. Now, I'm just going to say this. If I'm watching this and I'm a dentist and I've got a thriving practice prior to this, you got to pay your team anyway. Okay. They're sitting at home. I would still be having my huddles. I would still be having my meetings. I would have all my hygienists keeping their schedule, but on Zoom. Say, hey, look, we're not going to do any treatment today, but let's just talk about you. How you doing? Hey, we're here for our patients. The message is this. In a time like this, what you do either screams you care or you don't care. What a great opportunity. Like, if I'm a hygienist, I got 8 patients a day, the Zoom call. Now, I could call them. That's not going to go very far. But if I mean, I might just talk to them to see how you're doing. Because your value, your business, its value is based on the number of patients you retain or a big part of it through and after this, you know?
Yep. You know, and the difficulty is going to come in. I mean, what do you do I talked to a young man yesterday, I mean, who literally has no money. Now, he does have, I was able to ask him some questions, because what happens in a moment of panic, what you forget is you have an accounts receivable. And I don't know that all that's going to come in, because other people, your patients won't have money either. But some of that's going to come in, because what we're trying to do was do an immediate cash flow analysis and say, how do I manage it? What do I do? He said, you know, my team is wonderful. I don't know that I can pay him past this next paycheck. And I'm afraid. And I said, it's good that you're afraid. That means that you care about them. Otherwise, you would just say too bad. So that's a wonderful thing. First thing to do, I want you to savor that for a moment. You love them, and that's why you care. That's why you care. Otherwise, it would be easy. You got to look for things. And maybe if you can't do that, maybe you should check the state unemployment rules. I don't know about all the states. I've been trying to look at as many as I can. Yesterday, I was online quite a bit going to those. One of the ones I noticed was that in Washington, you can do what's called an 8-week something where you park them in this category. They can immediately collect. They can file online and find out if they're eligible right away and then get enrolled in the plan right away. And for that 8 weeks, they're not required to look for work. The expectation is they're coming back in 8 weeks. And that was a special thing. There's actually, Washington has their own website. Our own webpage specifically about this. So if you're in Washington, you can go look at that. The other states that I could find, some had specific websites. Most I couldn't find a specific thing about this incident using either COVID-19 or coronavirus. But in those states, they also have things that you can arrange for. And I'm guessing they're planning on how they're going to manage this. I think that parts of the federal bills, and again, I'm reading so much stuff, and this might just be suggestion. I heard that the one that was passed by the House, that bill, is going to go to the Senate, and McConnell has already basically told everybody to vote for it. I read that this morning. He came out publicly and said, what was it? Gag and vote yes. So he was saying, you know, even though there's stuff you don't like here, swallow it. We have to do this. We got to do something. I'm not sure about the ramifications of that. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but I heard that that 2 weeks that's mandatory doesn't apply to people who have less than 50 employees or more than 500. That's what I read. Okay. And my kitten just joined me. I don't know if everybody can see that because I'm seeing you right now. So I don't know if they can see my cat or not.
Yeah, we can. We can all
okay. See the cat. Everybody sees the cat. Sorry, just crawled up on my lap and was in my face. All right. In that regard, you know, if and again, this is just ideas that come to my head. Everybody's going to panic. Sometimes the best thing you can do, if it's possible for you, if you have any capability to do this, it's not that I necessarily have to pay him. I have to say, what do you need? I mean, because if it meant me going and finding some financing that I could, so that I could borrow money to pay, to give them money just to buy food, I would just give them a personal loan. I mean, you can be creative around things so we can survive. We'll figure out how to manage it later. I'm not saying give that money away. I'm saying somehow, if I can't afford to do payroll, I read another one yesterday, and maybe somebody else knows this. The IRS put a moratorium on employer taxes. You can now defer them up to 90 days. I got that from my accountant, which means that you don't, I don't know that that's good, because I'm not sure that I want to owe the federal government any money, because when they want it, they can come and get it any way they want.
For
sure. I'm not sure that's a positive, but it's an immediate thing that if you did do payroll and you couldn't pay payroll taxes, at least right now you got a deferral for 90 days. And again, the most important thing you can do, and Christian said this, sit down, take a deep breath, say, okay, what is the reality of my situation? What do I have in the bank? What's in the accounts receivable? What part of that do I think will come in? Estimate conservatively. You know, I'm not sure. Some people are still going to pay you. Some people will keep going until they run into a crisis, but they will want to do that. Come up with an idea of where you are so that you can proceed forward, because otherwise all I see is fear and panic in myself. I'm afraid. I know I'm afraid. And so sit back, relax for a moment. I'm not saying relax and give it away. I'm saying relax enough to say, okay, where am I really? Let's deal with, this is really hard, because in an emotional moment, it's hard to be logical. And because you think being logical means you don't care about it. You care about it totally, with all seriousness. Sit down and say, where am I? What is the reality of the situation? Then I could go to my team and say, okay, guys, I'm scared too. I think we can get through this together. I can't afford to do payroll, the next payroll. There are some things that I've investigated. Unemployment is available, because the reason for this is there is no work. So I went online and I looked at their state stuff, and here's what we can do. The other one is this, you know, I have some savings set aside. I can give you guys some advances and some loans to just buy. What do you need? You know, every Christmas we watch the movie, right? The run on the bank, when it finally came down to people taking what they needed, they were able to, as a community, pull together. Now, I'm not saying that will solve the problem. That's not my point. My point is, let's be open to all possibilities for us to get through this together, because the number one thing that will come from this is it's going to end. Okay. And when it ends, we're going to have to go back to being a team that loves each other and cares about each other. That message has to be received now.
Right. Yeah. And LA, our director of coaching, always teaches us this. Vulnerability is not a weakness. It's actually a strength in moments like this. So it's very important to say, hey, look, if you're scared, scared. Another thing is, you are going to have to get creative. If you have a very large team, this might be a great opportunity individually to go to team members and say, is anyone interested in an unpaid leave of absence, where you can just take some time? Maybe they don't need it and they could still stay employed. And again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how this would work, but just put all options on the table and let them know, hey, look, this might be I don't know.
Yep.
So, Any other thoughts? You know, at the top of the hour, we're going to transition into the HR details.
Yeah, actually, and I'm behind already because we sort of are doing virtual things with each other because I'm home. I'm self-quarantined. But as a team, we are all getting together, and I was supposed to be there a little bit ago, and I told you the time thing messed me up. I'm honored that you asked me to be here, I would offer this. You know, I don't have any answers. I have the best things that I can deal with right now, and I know this is what's going to happen is the way that we manage this with ourselves and with those that we are close to and with the people that we have the privilege to serve is going to shape who we are when it's over. And you said this, Kirk, and I love hearing it, is that the things that are most important always rise to the surface in moments like this. The other stuff will be okay. And I hate to say, it's just money. Now, I'm not minimizing the importance of that. I'm saying that it is not the top thing on my list at this point in time. There are times in my life where it was the top thing on my list because I had to be doing something with it. Right now, we got to figure out a way to do what we have to do, and we have to figure out a way to make it work. I think we can do that if we all stick together.
Buddy, those are powerful, powerful words. I love you, man.
Thanks. Love you too.
All right, buddy. Be good. Thank you guys so much.
Hey, if you enjoyed this week's episode of the Best Practice Show podcast, we invite you to check out actdentalu.com. ActDentalU is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of starting, growing, or running a great dental practice. Whether you're just getting started or whether you're a well-established dental practice, ActDentalU can help you and your team get to the next level. With our extensive course library and all the current best practices in dentistry and our Friday masterclasses and workshops for you and your team and a supportive, active community to help you along the way with encouragement and feedback, ActDentalU is the perfect place for any dentist to create a better dental practice so that you can have the freedom to enjoy a better life. So check it out at actdentalu.com.